Welcome to Dark History Time with Brian. A few things before we get started. Need to let you know that you might find some of this material disturbing. We do use adult language on the show. Listener discretion is advised. Hey, welcome back, guys. It is nearly the end of January, and I have failed you once again as far as bringing you a case. Just cannot seem to find the time lately, and quite honestly been having some motivational issues as well. On the good side of that, though, I did speak with somebody that we had at the convention this past year who volunteered to research maybe two episodes and write me an outline. Maybe help me get over the hump. I'm not going to reveal who that is or what it'll be about just yet because. but I'm excited, and once that does happen, of course, we'll get it recorded and I will give proper credit where credit is due. I can say that this person is a master researcher and has been featured on some very large true crime podcasts, and so for her to offer that to me is humbling and pretty friggin' cool. So since I have dropped the ball yet again, it looks like January is going to be just another month where I read you some dates and some bad shit that happened during the month of January. I know we're almost done. Hopefully you guys are hearing this on Monday the 24th. That's the plan anyway. Gonna do my normal walkthrough basically, and then from last year as a Christmas present for the year of 2021, I got a little daily calendar that was, I have forgotten the name, that sucks and I'm sorry, couldn't find one for this year, but it's page a day calendar, there it is, page a day calendar, and I pulled couple things out of there that happened in January. One of them is going to be a pretty crazy story, and the other one is going to be pretty humorous. So I think we'll end the episode on the humorous part, and we'll just get down to the heavy stuff right now. So without further ado, let's go ahead and start the month of January in dark history. There are going to be some foreign names of both areas and people. I hope I don't butcher them too bad. I try my best. I've had the good fortune of living through some of these things, and the reason I say good fortune is because I've heard the way to pronounce these names. At least that's the way the news of the day have done it. So we'll see how I do. Let's start with January 5, 1919. You'll recognize where this heads. The German Workers' Party was founded by Anton Drexler in Munich. Adolf Hitler became member number 7, and he changed the name in April of 1920 to the National Socialist German Workers' Party, commonly shortened to the Nazi Party. Also January 5, this time 1976, I remember hearing about this, because this is the beginning. It ended in January of 1979, so I would have been 6 years old. I do remember hearing about this. There's been a number of films, books, and other things done on this. January 5, 1976, the Khmer Rouge, led by Pol Pot, announced a new constitution that legalized the communist government and renamed the country Kampuchea. This is in Cambodia. Forgive me. I forgot to put that in there. During his reign, over 1 million people died in the killing fields. That was the name of one of the films. To believe it, I think it won some Oscars. Don't hold me to that. I didn't look it up. I should have. As he forced people out of the cities into the countryside to create an idyllic society, educated and professional city people were especially targeted for murder and almost completely annihilated. In January of 1979, Pol Pot was overthrown by Cambodian rebels and Vietnamese troops. January 5, 1993. I don't have a bunch on him because I just want to hit on it, and I want you guys to look it up on your own. Wesley Allen Dodd was executed January 5, 1993. Wesley was a violent pedophile and child murderer. if you don't do well, I mean, nobody should do well, but if it bothers you to hear about crimes against children, don't look him up. If you are like me and want to try to get into the mind as much as we possibly can, being lay people, you just gotta look him up. You'll find a number of things. If you get the chance, you can type him into YouTube. He did do some interviews. And I hate to say to his credit, but he is very self-aware in the interviews and does say that I cannot be let out. I need to be executed. There's no fixing me, and there's no hope of any kind of rehabilitation. He tells them, I believe it was when he was handed the death sentence, I believe he said in open court that, yes, that's what I need to have done, is to be executed. January 10th. 1878. I just threw this in here just to show you how long some good things can take to happen. 1878, an amendment granting women the right to vote was introduced in Congress. Guess what? That didn't pass until 1920. It took 42 friggin' years before we decided that was okay to do. Back to true crime, January 15th, 1947. The body of Elizabeth Short, hereafter known as the Black Dahlia, was discovered by LAPD officers. Her body had been cut in half at the waist and drained of blood. Her face had been slashed from the corners of her mouth to her ears. There were several cuts on her breasts and thighs. The lower half of her body was posed a foot away from the upper part. And under the lower part, her intestines were tucked quite neatly under her buttocks. Upper portion was posed with her hands over her head, elbows bent at right angles, and of course on the lower part of her body, the perpetrator spread her legs as well to make it quite the scene. January 16th, 1936, Albert Fish, known as the Gray Man and the Werewolf of Wisteria, among a few other titles, was executed for the murder and mutilation of 10-year-old Grace Budd. He also wrote a letter to her mom saying that he consumed her entire body. Clearly there was evidence of the murder and mutilation at the house that he did it at. Obviously there's not going to be any evidence beyond his statements as far as consumption of the body goes. Clearly they never found a body. Did he eat it all or not? I suppose that's up for debate, but wouldn't surprise anyone who knows anything about him in the least. Here's a crazy one for you. January 20th, 1942. I'm going to say his name both ways because I understand, and tell me if I'm wrong, I understand that East German and West German now pronounce these differently, so I think that's led to our hearing them a couple different ways. First name's Reinhardt. I have always gone with Heydrich, but lately I've been hearing it as Heydrich. But either way, Reinhardt Heydrich, who was Heinrich Himmler's second-in-command of the SS, convened the Wannsee Conference in Berlin. It was composed of 15 top Nazi bureaucrats with the idea to coordinate the final solution in which the Nazis would attempt to exterminate the entire Jewish population in Europe, which was estimated at the time to be 11 million people. Call a conference to talk about how to exterminate 11 million people. Good stuff. All right, we're going to have... This can be confusing because there are at least three that I know of that have the same title, this being the earliest one. So, January 22nd, 1905. 500 Russian workers who were protesting were killed by troops of Tsar Nicholas II in St. Petersburg, and it became known as Bloody Sunday. I suppose for clarity purposes, it's now known as Bloody Sunday 1905, because there would be a Bloody Sunday in 1972, which I will hit on later in this pod, because it happened in January as well. And, of course, the March 7th, 1965 Bloody Sunday in Selma, Alabama, between civil rights advocates and, Alabama State Troopers. I think it was just Alabama State troops that perpetrated that. January 24th. This one is pretty crazy, guys. And I had heard about this. I didn't realize it happened in January, but I've heard about this. If you pay attention at all to World War II, especially the Japanese angle, they truly, truly believed no surrender, every man to the death. That led, of course, to the ideas of the kamikazes, and that was instilled in them. There is no surrender, you fight to the last. So with that in mind, January 24th, 1972, a Japanese soldier, Soichi Yokoi, was discovered in Guam. He had spent 28 years hiding in the jungle, unaware that World War II had ended. Insane. 28 years in the jungle, thinking that he's still at war. Also on January 24th, 1989, I remember this quite well. I was working at the high school library while I was in high school. So we got a number of newspapers and magazines from around the country. And of course, this was front page news on all of those. Ted Bundy was executed in Florida. January 25th, 1947, Alphonse Capone passes away. Complications from syphilis that he contracted years and years before. It ate up his mind and body, and he was the shell of what he was at the height of his, I don't want to say fame, but height of his career, if we want to call it that. Also on January 25th, this time in 1971, Charles Manson was found guilty at his trial for the Tate and LaBianca murders. You guys may or may not know about this. I don't know how many people know that Australia was set up as a prison colony, basically. And that started January 26th, 1788. The British established a settlement in Sydney Harbor. 11 ships with 778 convicts arrived, and they set up a penal colony to relieve overcrowded prisons in England. Recently, I'd say within the last 10 years, maybe not even that long, there has been a line of wines out called 19 Crimes. That is what that's about. There were 19 crimes that you could commit that would get you transported to Australia. So those bottles of wine have guys' faces on there, and I believe it mentions one of the crimes. And you can also, I think they got a QR code or something you can scan and hear the story. Some of them are fictionalized stories of these convicts, but they revolve around the crimes that could get you. It was called transported then. It wasn't deported. It was transported to Australia. January 26th, 1943, as things begin to turn and Allies start bombing Germany heavily, the Nazis begin to use Hitler Youth troops to operate their anti-aircraft batteries throughout Germany. January 27th, 1945, I can only imagine what this looked like and what this felt like, smelled like. I believe it's wholly unbelievable what these folks encountered. January 27th, 1945, the Russian army liberated Auschwitz, where it was estimated that 2 million people had been killed, including 1.5 million Jews. If you guys, I just recently rewatched Band of Brothers. They come across a concentration camp, and they mention that they heard the Russians are coming across ones bigger. It is quite the scene in Band of Brothers. They do a fantastic job, Steven Spielberg and Tom Hanks being behind that series. If you do nothing else, I highly suggest you watch the entire thing. But if you just want to a blurb. I'm sure you could probably find it on YouTube or find that episode, especially if you have HBO Max. It's heart-wrenching to see them just, they're just on a standard patrol, and they come out of the woods, and there they see this camp filled with walking dead people, basically, skeletons, and people that by all rights should probably not be with us anymore, but through some sheer determination on their part, they survived it. Because as things started to go south for the Germans, they were ordered to evacuate the camp, leave everything behind, to try to destroy all the records, try to kill as many of the prisoners as they could. But if the Allies got too close, just get the hell out of Dodge and leave them locked up. Also, January 27th, 1967, three American astronauts were killed in a fire that erupted inside of Apollo 1 during a launch simulation. That is covered in another great series from HBO called From the Earth to the Moon that details the space race. January 28th, sticking with this theme, January 28th, 1986, which I remember very, very well, because we happened to be in social studies class and we were watching a series called North and the South. So we had the TV that was on the rolling cart and the VHS tape and the VCR, and we were watching it as part of class. So we had a TV in there. The space shuttle Challenger exploded 74 seconds into flight, killing seven on board, including the first ordinary citizen, Krista McAuliffe, who was a school teacher. NASA, I don't remember how long it did this. I don't want to call it a drive, but I guess kind of it was, where you could submit to become the person that they chose to go up on this flight. Obviously, thousands upon thousands, maybe even more people sent correspondence to NASA stating their case and why they should be picked. I believe Krista's class sent something in on her behalf. I don't recall exactly, but she was ultimately chosen to be one of the ones to go on this flight that ended only 74 seconds into its mission with a catastrophic explosion, killing everybody. Like I said, we were watching the North and the South. The teacher at the time was good friends with the principal, so the principal happened to come into our classroom. I don't know if he went to every classroom or not. I'd never ask anybody else, but he came into our classroom and told my teacher, Mr. Schultz, that what had happened. And Mr. Schultz, because they were friends and they joked a little back and forth, he thought he was bullshitting. And he told him no. Mr. Hanlon said, no, absolutely not. Why don't you stop the tape and turn on the TV? And there it was on the news coverage. And that was the rest of everybody's afternoon. January 29th, 1916. World War I's first aerial bombings of Paris took place as German Zeppelins started to bomb Paris. Also January 29th, this time 3 years later, 1919, the 18th Amendment, easy for me to say, 18th Amendment went into effect. That is prohibition, folks, which, whether you've sided with it or against it, I think we could say it was a very failed experiment. Nothing happened the way that they had envisioned it to happen. It created all of your bootleggers and a lot of your crime. It was the beginning of your, I don't want to say the beginning of the mafia, because clearly it wasn't. I mean, the mafia's been around for a long time. But as far as dominating organized crime in the headlines and in people's conscience, That's when I would say that it started during Prohibition. And you can tell me I'm full of shit if you wish, but that's my thought on it, is that brought it to prominence. January 30th, 1933, Hitler is appointed Chancellor of Germany by President Paul von Hindenburg. We also know how that ended up going. Not the best move in the world. Also January 30th, 1948, I believe everybody knows the name Gandhi. Mahatma Gandhi is assassinated by a religious fanatic in India on January 30th, 1948. Also January 30th, 1968, the Tet Offensive is launched in Vietnam. They attacked North Vietnamese troops attacked 36 provincial capitals and 5 major cities in South Vietnam, including the U.S. Embassy in Saigon and the Presidential Palace. Ultimately, they were repelled, but this was kind of, it made the news. It was the nightly news. I believe that was the cause of Walter Cronkite, who was known as the most trusted man in America, saying that he did not believe the war could be won. And thus began the long 5 years that didn't end until 73, long, slow decline of morale, and any support that might have been there quickly eroded after that. Lastly, for my research, again, January 30th, 1972, I told you I'd get to it. Here it is. In Londonderry, Northern Ireland, 13 Roman Catholics are killed by British troops during a banned civil rights march. And this became known as Bloody Sunday as well. We'll call it Bloody Sunday 1972, as referenced in U2's song, Bloody Sunday, or Sunday Bloody Sunday, I believe is the title of their song. That's what it's about, because you may or may not know the band U2. They're Irish. I said I'd go a little bit different, so credit where it's due. I'm going to just read this directly because it's pretty insane, and I don't want to miss anything. This is from the Page a Day calendar, True Crime. In January of 1936, 21-year-old socialite and heiress Ann Cooper Hewitt, daughter of electrical engineer and inventor Peter Cooper Hewitt, sued her mother Marion for $500,000, the equivalent to about $9 million today, in a San Francisco court. Ann claimed that shortly before her 21st birthday, Marion had paid two doctors $9,000 each to remove Ann's fallopian tubes during a routine appendectomy. The sneaky surgery was an attempt to disinherit Ann, whose two-thirds share of her wealthy father's estate was contingent on her having children. Marion countered that she had sterilized her daughter because Ann was feeble-minded and promiscuous. Witnesses testified to Ann's intelligence and Marion's neglectful parenting style, and eventually settled with her mother out of court for $150,000. After a suicide attempt and a brief illness, Marion died shortly after the settlement was made. Ann attended the funeral. In addition to the Cooper Hewitt suit, the doctors accused of performing a sterilization surgery on Ann were brought up on charges of felony mayhem, the act of disabling or disfiguring an individual, by the San Francisco prosecutor. With Marianne unable to give testimony because of her illness, the defense relied mainly on an argument developed with Paul Popano, secretary of the Human Betterment Foundation and founder of the Southern California branch of the American Eugenics Society, that maintained Anne was unfit to be a mother. As evidence, they cited her promiscuity, undermined the witnesses who testified to her intelligence, and even dizzyingly claimed that because Marianne was found to be an unfit mother, it logically followed that Anne would be unfit as well, thereby justifying the doctor's decision to perform sterilization. Convinced of the doctor's authorities to determine Anne's incapacity, the judge dismissed all charges against the doctors after 6 days of testimony. Fucking insane. The Cooper Hewitt case repopularized the idea of eugenics, the practice of controlled selective breeding of human populations in the United States. Eugenics had fallen out of favor during the early 1930s because of shoddy science and associations with the Nazi regime. But it was given a platform again as the nation was gripped by the Cooper Hewitt trials. The pseudoscience had mainly targeted poor populations of color in the United States, as well as people with disorders such as epilepsy, the intellectually disabled, and the unemployed. But the success of the doctor's argument cast a wider net, leaving even more women vulnerable to involuntary sterilization. And one more piece of craziness for you. California laws authorizing the practice were repealed in 1979, but involuntary sterilization continues today. Between 2006 and 2010, 144 women in the California prison system underwent the same procedures and without their informed consent. Court-ordered sterilizations occur throughout the country, and certain judges have offered reduced sentences in exchange for hormonal implants or other forms of birth control. Pretty insane. I will not get on a soapbox too high or for too long. I will say that in my line of work, I do know of at least one instance where a female, she wasn't involuntarily sterilized, but because of her treatment of, I believe, her first two children, they passed away under mysterious and suspicious circumstances, and she continued to get pregnant with the same person. I know the DCFS was in the delivery room with her for her deliveries and whisked away the child every time. I don't know if she continued to think that one of those times that it was going to escape notice and she was going to be able to take home a child, but she was never allowed to my knowledge, take any of her kids home after the first two passed. So, do I personally believe that some folks should not have children? Abso-friggin-lutely. Do I believe that it should be forced upon them? That's where I think it gets really sticky. Because who ultimately can make that determination, and what gives them the right to make the determination? I know where I land on it. Personally, I don't want to piss any of you guys off too terribly, so I will keep that to myself. But I do wholeheartedly believe there are some people out there that definitely do not need to be bringing children into the world. And we'll leave it at that. So, from all that insanity and all that heaviness, let's end you on a high note. Haha, quite literally, this is a little punny. I didn't even think about it. I wasn't attempting that, but here we go. Also from the page a day. Toronto Justice Mary Meissner summed it up best when she called Constable Vittorio Dominelli a complete idiot for his evidence tampering on January 27, 2018. Early that evening, Dominelli and his partner, Jamie Young, were part of a raid on a marijuana dispensary in the west end of the city. Of the seized items, they failed to report a chocolate hazelnut bar infused with cannabis oil and pocketed it instead. Later that night, while assigned to surveillance duties, the two officers ate the chocolate bar. In a high-induced panic, they radioed for help using the code 1033, which is usually reserved for officers in serious trouble. Officers who responded confirmed that the two men seemed to be in distress, but soon discovered they were just extremely stoned. Dominelli pleaded guilty to attempting to obstruct justice and resigned from the force. So there you go. Like I said, super punny, super dad jokey, but we'll end that on that high note right there with a couple officers that decided they wanted a chocolate hazelnut THC bar and lost their job and lost face. So, if you're going to do those things, don't be a cop on duty. Otherwise, I got no problem with it, you know? To each his own. So, there's our little episode for January. I am really hoping, like I said, that you guys will get this on the 24th. Give myself a couple weeks from that date to get you some new material that's not just reciting dates for you. Of course, we will do that for February. Looks like that would put me, well, depends on where I want to release it at. I don't know if I want to release it around Valentine's Day, although that would, maybe we'll do a Valentine's Day episode in addition to the other ones that I have in mind. And we'll do that Valentine's episode. I think it's easy for you guys to figure out where I would probably take that. That would be the St. Valentine's Day Massacre that happened here in Chicago. Well, I shouldn't say here, but just a little bit north of me in Chicago. I've been to that site. It's nothing but a vacant lot now that's grass and trees. However, the buildings that the lookouts were posted in are still there and look exactly like they probably did then, save for the window AC units. I've documented my travels there on my original Facebook page, Brian's Dark History and Pop Culture page. Pretty original title there. That's going back. Hell, I don't know. I saw some Facebook memories today that said they were from 13 friggin' years ago. I can't believe we've had Facebook that long, but clearly we have. So I know early on I started that. That was my first ever page and my first ever attempt to share my travels and what I've learned since I've been doing this. So I used to take pictures of my own and then find historical pictures and put together little photo albums on that page, and then I'd write up the narrative. So back then I had more drive than I seem to have had this last 6 months or so, and I would actually write up my own narratives, and that got people to say, hey, you should write a book. And now we've got the Dahmer book that I co-authored with Eric Werner that's out there. That was my first little foray into actually getting a book together. But I think to do myself justice and be proud of what I can put together, I probably need to come up with a book on all of my travels and the history behind the places and why I went there and what I got from going there. So anyway, I set an end, and now I've rambled on for a little longer, so I will cut you guys loose. Thank you very much for listening. I do have to say thank you. I have finally broken the 1,000 listens plateau. That is awesome for an audience of my size and for a podcast of this size that has no outside money coming in. We don't have sponsors. We don't have anything else going on. If you want to, I won't say no, but these last two or three podcasts I've actually just recorded here, and I send them to Austin to clean up and make me sound better, and then he gets them posted for us. So we haven't even sat down across from each other for, I don't think, since the convention back in October. So maybe we'll get that changed. Hopefully we'll get that changed. But until we can both get on the same page, this seems to work okay as well. And I think it sounds decent, because technology now, I mean, you can record pretty easily. And like I said, he plugs it into the things that he knows how to do, being a sound engineer, and cleans it up, makes it sound even better. So stick with us. Stick with me. Thanks for listening to everything. It looks like at least every episode has gotten close to 70-ish listens per. My little analytics says my audience is still less than 50 dedicated listeners. So for you guys to go back and listen to everything and get me to the 1,000 listens is pretty awesome. I truly, truly appreciate it. And hopefully I can get on a better schedule here for you guys to look forward to, and hopefully you continue to stick with us. That's all I got for now. It's a balmy 23 degrees here in central Illinois. Hope you guys are staying warm, staying safe. Did just get through the vid myself last week, tested positive. I gotta say that I had the two vaccinations too early for my booster, but I am very happy with the results that I obtained. I am sure the vaccines had a lot to do with it, without getting super political, because that was the biggest problem with the whole thing, is it became super political. I will say that what the science, as it flowed in and as things were learned, they did say, not necessarily going to keep you from getting it, but it should keep you from getting it in a severe way and keep you from being hospitalized, and that's it. I sound a little different still. I still sound a little nasally, I think. But otherwise, a very, very intermittent cough. I never had a fever. I only had a headache for a day or two. Before I got the positive test, I had gone to the gym, and that's kind of what got me to go get the home test, is I went to the gym and did my normal workout routine, and I was only about halfway through it and unable to catch my breath as easily as I usually can. So I was like, maybe, you know, a little bit of cough, a little bit of phlegm, and then that. So got the home test, and sure enough, there I was. But I workplace has been hit hard, so they ask if didn't have symptoms, come back after your 5 days. So I did, and here we go. That was last Friday, so about a week ago, went back. So there we are. I made it through, and I think I'm more informed now than I was before about it, how everything works. So I'm now getting on to ramble. I apologize, guys. If you turned this off 5 minutes ago, you didn't miss a damn thing. Stick with me. We're going to continue to do this thing and watch for updates on the 2022 convention. Posted our first special guest announcement this week, Doc Ray Stoker, great-grandnephew of Bram Stoker of Dracula fame. Doc Ray is going to be joining us this year, and he has two presentations that he will be doing. He does a few different ones. I don't know if we've determined which ones he's going to do, but he will do two presentations, probably one Friday evening and one Saturday. It will be a Friday night, Saturday event this year, also at the Hyatt Hotel. And yeah, follow along on the page. Follow Dark History Time with Brian, follow Dark History and HorrorCon. And if you feel like it, go look at Brian's Dark History and Pop Culture page. Thanks again for everything, guys. I love and appreciate all of you for listening. I'll talk to you soon.